Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Good morning. It's Wednesday, the 9th of September. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Ghana's President John Mahama speaks out on economic opportunities that Africa can offer.
I guess if sunlight were exportable, African countries would be among the richest countries in this world.
How to save the forests? World Forest Congress in Durban is trying to find answers.
It is serious. It is taking at least 40,000 hectares of forest and bushland every year. It is affecting people through land necessities.
These and more stories coming up right here on Africa Link.
Top story.
We start the bulletin with news from right here in Germany. As Africa is increasingly seen as a continent of great opportunities, German investors are growing more interested but are still very hesitant. During the German-African Economic Summit in Berlin, African representatives, including Ghana's president John Dramani Mahama, explained to their German counterparts the benefits of investing in Africa. This report by Julia Hahn has been adapted for Africa Link by Christina Kripper.
Ghana's president John Dramani Mahama arrived in the German capital with a lot of good arguments in his luggage.
For an investor, what are you looking out for? You're looking for a place where it's conducive to do business. And I think that Ghana offers that. Democracy, transparency, freedom of speech, you know, and a good natural resource base.
8 years ago, a huge oil field named Jubilee was found in this West African country. In the wake of this discovery, investments in infrastructure caused Ghana's economy to surge by more than 10%. But since then, the euphoria has died down. This year, gross domestic product is expected to grow by around 5%. Matthias Wachter, director of the Security and Natural Resources Department at the Confederation of German Industries, BDI, explains.
Und viele Staaten sind in der jetzigen Situation.
Falling oil prices have hit many African countries very hard. That led to budget imbalance and reduced capital needed for investments and infrastructure. Even some German firms are feeling the sting.
Wachter goes on to explain that this is due to fewer infrastructure projects being tendered in affected African countries like Ghana. But German companies are looking mainly to invest in infrastructure. The situation is even dire in Nigeria, Africa's biggest oil producer. Oil exports finance 70% of the state's budget. For a long time, Nigeria didn't bother to develop alternative revenue sources. The Nigerian newspaper This Day calculated that the fall in the price of oil cost the state almost $12 billion in revenue in the first half of 2014. Matthias Wachter of the BDI again.
Viele afrikanische Länder, die im Moment sehr stark.
These countries have to start thinking about economic diversification to become more independent from natural resources and develop new business sectors. And that could be a big chance for German investors because they have the know-how needed in many sectors.
In vielen Bereichen haben.
President Mahama of Ghana understands the need to stop relying on oil, gold or cocoa.
And so I think that African countries should be looking at introducing clean energy. I mean, what do we have more in Africa than sunshine? I mean, we have 12 months of sunshine. I guess if sunlight were exportable, African countries would be among the richest countries in this world.
Africa has 6 out of the 10 fastest growing economies in the world. The success of many of them, says Richard Sezibera, Secretary General of the East African Community.
It's not based on oil, it's not based mainly on minerals, it's based on the relatively sophisticated sectors of our economy. Tourism, ICT, energy, some of the technology companies that are setting up. So it's an exciting place to be.
For now, however, German business with sub-Saharan Africa accounts only for about 1.2% of the total of German world commerce, according to this country's economics ministry. This is more or less the amount of business done by Germany with tiny Slovakia in Central Europe. less than 1% of direct German investments flows to Africa. German investors are still too scared of political unrest, corruption, and an overblown bureaucracy.
Christina Krippel there. And for more on what Africans expect out of the partnership, my colleague Assumpta Latus spoke to James Asere Adeje, chairman of the Association of Ghanaian Industries.
What we are expecting is to be able to present the African case and to let the German corporates realize the potentials that are in Africa which they can invest in.
And what are you expecting to come out of it?
That at the end of the conference, we would be able to bring to the fore some of the key sectors that companies in Germany can invest in, and also try to arrange some collaboration in terms of private sector partnership between Ghanaian companies and German companies in particular.
If a German entrepreneur is coming to Ghana, where would you advise him to invest in?
Particularly infrastructure, and I'm talking about energy. For some time now, we realize that there's energy deficit, especially in Ghana, where industries are really not getting the needed energy. And of course, this energy deficit also provides investment opportunity for firms in that sector. We are also looking at roads, ports and highways, the agribusiness sector, where Ghana has a huge natural resources and arable land. Manufacturing also is one key area that we want to see German companies invest in. And let me add that in manufacturing, the government is really creating the enabling environment. For example, creating what we call free zone enclaves. Now, once you set up in the free zone enclaves, you are exempted from taxes on raw materials and you are given tax holidays between 5 and 10 years, provided you can export about 70% of your produce. And Ghana serves as a hub for the sub-region of over 350 million people. So in investing in Ghana, you are virtually looking at a bigger sub-regional market, not only the limited Ghanaian market. And I believe that this gives German companies the great chance to actually explore the huge opportunities that are in Ghana and Africa.
One of the challenges that have been always highlighted by the German investors is the corruption. What would you say about it?
Let me, even before I speak to corruption issue, talk about the fact that the lack of medium to long-term capital is for the private sector. So it will be very welcoming if we can have investment funds in Germany to actually take advantage of that gap in financing medium to long-term projects in Ghana. Now, on the issue of corruption, we perfectly agree that corruption is in Africa and, of course, in business everywhere. But then there are a lot of institutions being put in place to ensure that corruptions are checked. We have the Transparency Ghana. We have what we call an institution called SHRAD. And then also we have commercial courts that are specifically set up, to really address some of these issues related to corruption. It is very important for us to note that corruption should not deter any business that would want to come to Ghana and Africa. We have private sector associations like Association of Ghana Industries, of which I am the president. Now, what we do is that we pre-qualify businesses, creating the needed awareness of which businesses are very credible. And as we do that, we limit or reduce that element of corruption.
How has the falling of oil prices affected the Ghanaian business industry?
It's positive and at the same time negative. It's positive because we are a crude oil import country. If the crude oil prices go down, it is good for us. And then the prices then also go down as finished products in the crude oil industry. The other aspect though is that we are an oil producing country. Not too long ago. So once we have made our projections and then we are not able to meet those projections by way of oil revenue, that would also affect us.
Assumpta Latus was speaking to James Asere Adeje. He's the chairman of the Association of Ghanaian Industries. You're still listening to Africa Link live from our studios in Bonn, Germany.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
Deforestation has become a global challenge. Combating it equally needs a combined global effort. To this effect, more than 1,000 delegates from the global forestry community world over attending the 14th Forestry Congress in South Africa's coastal city of Durban. The Congress aims to build a new vision for the future of forests and forestry at all levels. This includes investments in forestry and in the people so as to achieve sustainable development. It is the first time Forestry Congress is taking place in Africa. It is organized by the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization. From Durban, Subri Govender reports.
The delegates I spoke to say they are attending the Congress in order to highlight the destruction and degradation of forests in their own countries. They want to share the specific problems of deforestation, which affects people's livelihood and way of life. El Aji Sen is a delegate from Senegal. He explains the extent of the problem.
It is serious. It is taking at least 40,000 hectares of forest and bushland every year. It is affecting people through land necessities, through the lack of a safety net for living, and it is affecting people through environmental effects of deforestation and relatively desertification.
A delegate from the tiny West African country of Benin is Claude Dadinja. He says the destruction of forests have not only affected food production, but also the capacity of people to use the forests for their own medicinal requirements.
But deforestation is affecting people in many ways. One of the ways is to get the wood for energy to cook, and we cannot find wood anymore, and cooking become very difficult. Also, some trees are used for medicine, traditional way, and now the trees are disappearing. We don't find those trees to get the leaves and treat themselves.
One of the delegates who is attending the Congress to gain support for the protection of the forests in her own country is Mina Estimat from the north of Iran. She says she is very concerned that they are losing their forests.
I believe in them. I have a sense of belonging to the forest, but we are losing the forest. In north of Iran, we have, you know, special heritage site of Hyrkanian forest that we had the same in European forest, but we are losing them because we are still logging the forest. We are still using the wood of those heritage sites, you know. And in the west of Iran, we have the oak forest. They are unique. About more than half of the water resources of Iran are coming from the Zagros Mountains, that these forests are keeping them, are providing them that water. But these forests are also dying.
An environmental activist from Nigeria is Michael Onyeka. He says extensive logging is taking place in Nigeria and other countries in Africa, and this is impacting on efforts to counter climatic change. He says he is attending the Congress because he believes that, like all other delegates, the countries in the world have to work together to protect the forests for the future of humanity.
That we all need to work together because we have a common problem. And that is that we need the forest more than the forest needs us. And we need the forest now more than ever because of the increasing impact of climate change and global warming. We need more forests to be standing to produce oxygen, to produce the available medicinal plants for indigenous communities and so on. And we hope that, this kind of messages will go out from this conference, and that all parties will start working together across countries, across borders, and across organizations.
The Forestry Congress, which ends on Friday, aims to unite governments, indigenous communities, and non-governmental organizations in programs to finding solutions to climate change by preserving forests, integrating forests and other land uses, and improving food security and livelihoods. The Congress will also promote the use of wood as a renewable and sustainable source of energy, securing education and employment for the youth.
D.W. Subri Govender in South Africa.
Behind the headlines.
Hundreds of patients are protesting as Cameroon runs short of treatment for kidney failures in its entire health establishment. Much of its equipment is old, outdated, and non-functional. As DW's Moki Kinseka reports from Yaounde, patients have been dying and many others fear they may follow if the life-saving treatment is not found.
Hundreds of people with kidney ailments have come out for the burial of 37-year-old Misanga Alfred in Bankomo on the outskirts of Cameroon's capital, Yaounde. One of them, Bernard Tala, says Misanga died because he could not get treatment in any of Cameroonian hospitals. He says he too has not been able to receive treatment in the 4 hemodialysis centers he has visited. The situation has only brought despair.
Can you imagine? Since 1 month, we are traveling to Yaounde, to Ebolova, to treat ourselves. There is no machine, 2 machines for over 100 patients.
Cameroon has 10 centers for the treatment of acute hemodialysis complications. Von Wamajo, an expert on kidney problems, says the situation at the centers has worsened because much of the equipment has broken down due to old age and lack of maintenance.
It is very difficult for the patients because they are not actually getting effective treatment. Reason being that the machines are not in the best of order, because normally the center should have 8 machines working. The center has a capacity of 72 patients, but at the moment we have about 62 patients for only 3 machines that are working. And so the workload has increased in such a way that the staff of the unit are now forced to work 24 on 24.
Biological engineer Marlies Nonne says patients will only start receiving normal treatment when spare parts for the dialysis equipment are imported from Europe.
We are still waiting for spare parts to repair the breakdowns on the 3 other machines that are not functional.
Cameroon's health minister, André Mamafuda, has called on the patients to exercise patience until the situation is solved. He says patients who have emergency cases should be attended to first in hospitals.
I am congratulating and encouraging patients for their courage and solidarity as they have to cover long distances. Yet some are not finally treated. Cameroon has only 76 dialysis generators, which are insufficient for the many patients. Yet some are broken. We shall do our best to satisfy their needs as early as possible.
Investi dans le secteur de la dialyse.
Mamafuda said many patients had died, but did not say how many.
Moki Kinseka gave us that report on how patients in Cameroon are suffering.
For more about Africa Link, go to dw.com/AfricaLink. Find out about Africa Link's partner stations. Send us your feedback in a text message and sign up for our newsletter, dw.com/AfricaLink.
In Kenya, school holidays are over, but classrooms remain empty. Public school teachers who laid down their tools 2 weeks ago demanding a pay raise have refused to call off the strike. On 24th August, the country's highest labor court ruled in favor of the teachers and awarded them more than 50% pay raise. But the Teachers Service Commission, TSC, which is the teachers' employer, says it does not have the money to pay the increases awarded by the court. Instead, it went to the country's Supreme Court demanding that the strike be declared illegal. TSC has also threatened to sack teachers who carry on the strike. I've been speaking to DW's James Manula about the situation in Kenya. I started by asking him the genesis of the conflict between the teachers' union and the Teachers Service Commission.
Teachers in Kenya have had a problem with the government since the rule of President Daniel Arap Moi. It came to Mwai Kibaki, and then it has now come to Uhuru Kenyatta. When President Uhuru Kenyatta won the elections, they thought that he was going to make sure that they had paid their dues. From 1996, it's many years. So the amount has been accumulating over the years, and that is now forming part of their protests, demonstrations, and complaints.
2 weeks down the road, the teachers are not bowing down. What is exactly going to happen?
What is going to happen as we speak now? The teachers have vowed to stay out of classes until they are paid. Their argument is that they have won their cases before three courts, a high court, an industrial court, and the highest court on the land, that is the Supreme Court. These courts, they argue, would not have made a mistake to increase their salaries. They have been joined, or they are to be joined, by the biggest trade union in Kenya, Central Organization of Trade Unions, COTU. They are to be joined by the union that commands the loyalty of more than 1.6 million workers in Kenya, excluding teachers, of course. So that means they have now had what are characterized as an impetus to show to the world that they have a concrete case. And then the worst thing is coming on Monday, when the Central Organization of Trade Union, is calling on Kenyans not to report for work on Monday, this coming Monday, in solidarity with the striking teachers.
Now, James, the TSC has threatened to sack teachers who continue to strike. Is this a realistic action? And if indeed, what effects would it have?
As we speak now, I think they must have sacked striking teachers on paper. But in reality, I don't think they can sack nearly 300,000 teachers all over the country. That will be a disaster.
We know that teachers until now have been earning just about $160 per month. Is this something they can live on, considering the cost of life in Kenya?
That is what I personally can call little money to well-respected teachers, well-respected profession. Without those teachers, be they Kenyans or elsewhere, you would not be where you are talking to me. Although the government argues that other countries are paying teachers below $160.
What is the situation like in private schools?
Private schools, if one were to predict exams come, they'll pass with the flying marks.
I was speaking to James Manyula in Kenya's capital, Nairobi.
Opinion.
And now it's time for your opinion. Let's revisit two of our stories. What's your take on the teacher strike in Kenya? Do you think they are justified to carry on the strike even after government clearly stated it had no money to pay them? Is the government stand justified? And what's your take on the German African Economic Summit in Berlin? What do you think about German's interest in Africa? And is Africa ready for such business partnership? Please send us your say on one or two of those stories via text message to 49160957595910. In an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or do send us a letter to AfricaLink, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. And before we wind up the show, here is a recap of our main stories. Ghana's President John Mahama speaks out on economic opportunities that Africa can offer. And we've been listening to how the World Forest Congress in Durban is trying to find answers to deforestation. That's all we had for you today. Africa Link returns tomorrow at the same time. From me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet, enjoy the rest of your day.